Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 177. And it's a conversation that I've been waiting for a long time. And a lot of you guys have been waiting for a long time. I'm joined this week by Jean Grey, who is one of my favourite MCs on the planet. And through following her on social media has become one of my favourite people. I normally don't get into talking about the podcast specifics until after I've done the updatey bits, but I'm so hyped for this one. So I was a fan of Jean, and then I started following her on Twitter and Instagram and these places, and just it turns out that we've got the same brain, and this was the first time we met in person. I talked to her over radio, over the telephone on my old XFM show, The Beatdown, back in the day, but this was the first time we'd met face to face. And get ready for a long conversation of complete agreement and kinship, because we have, as said, it feels like, just although her life and upbringing and experience have been completely different to mine, we've kind of landed with so many of the same outlooks and approaches to life, to industry, to all sorts of things. But before I get into all that, I should mention that we're brought to you as ever by Speech Development records.com. That's my record label. Now, as we come into the end of the year, you've had a lot of free podcast conversations and chatter. So if you've enjoyed them and you're a fan, I don't have a donations page or anything, but that's kind of a cool place to go and spend some money. If you've enjoyed them and you feel they've been worth something, I've got my Distraction Pieces book there, which I drove to the warehouse the other day to sign every copy in my web store. So that's a good little Christmas present. There's also the graphic novel of poems I did years ago, and I signed all of them. And there's the DVD of my live Edinburgh Fringe show, a two-disc set with one of the first conversations I had that kind of spawned me to do a podcast on there as an extra. So there's loads of good stuff that you can buy in the web store. And there's Drunk Cast t-shirts if you're a fan of me, Chris and Stu, and the Drunk Cast guys. We're going to be doing an end of year one. We're trying to find a location. In fact, a little call to arms: if you have or know of anyone that has a radio type studio, I'm not looking for like a band or a practice room, I'm looking for a studio, preferably in London or thereabouts, that has a room that we can record 7 or 8 people on separate mics, all around a table, all getting blind drunk, preferably afternoon into evening. So if you're someone who has somewhere like that and can help us out, drop me a line. Obviously, if we have to pay, we have to pay, but equally, this is a podcast that's going to be going out to, you know, the previous Drunk Casts cumulatively have had over 1 million downloads themselves. So, you know, there's is it over 1 million? I think it is, yeah. So there's a big audience there, and we can give you shout-outs and whatnot. So drop me a line on social media. I'm on Twitter, at ScroobiusPipYo, and on Instagram, at ScroobiusPipYo, and Facebook.com/ScroobiusPip. If you are or know of someone that might be able to help us out and accommodate us. It's a tough one to find, because it's evening, and it has to be, as I said, a big enough room to fit, you know, 7 or 8 people, each with their own mic. We will need an engineer, and we will need to be allowed to get blind drunk. So, yeah, give us a shout on that. But, yeah, anyway, as I say, in speechofellenrecords.com, we've got Team 3W t-shirts, we've got Distraction Pieces podcast t-shirts, we've got Drunk Cast t-shirts. We've also got all my winter merch, which includes scarves with my label slogan of "We May Not Be For You, and That's Fine." There's scarves, umbrellas, rucksacks, all with that dope as hell slogan, which I brought up in the S. Craig Zahler episode a couple of weeks ago, which was a great chat. So yeah, there's loads of good stuff there, so head over and support. I mean, you'll hear from this discussion with Jean, it can get tough and frustrating as an independent artist, so support is always genuinely appreciated. It's tough with social media because of algorithms and whatnot. There's a lot that gets missed, and we'll have to have questions that are somewhat annoying and frustrating, considering how much we try and hustle and try and get everything out there to you guys. An interesting thing that we get to in the podcast, I just want to touch upon it quickly now, in case it sounds like we're being mean or grumpy. And I had it literally earlier today when people just comment saying, "Oh, you need to come to France," and I've not toured for 3 years, so I've got no reason to go to France. I had one with Newcastle. I had someone think I hate Newcastle because they said, "Oh, you need to come to Newcastle." I said, "I've got no reason to come to Newcastle because I haven't. I don't take time off. I'm constantly hustling and working here, so I don't take holidays. And if I had a holiday, I might not pick Newcastle on the top of my list." But that said, Newcastle is one of my favourite places in the UK. So it was amusing that someone thought, because I said I had no reason to go there, that I hate it. I don't hate it. I've just got no reason to go there. I'm not a very social person, so if you're asking me to travel 5 or 6 hours to come and hang out with a stranger, you know, even if I was a very social person, that's an unusual request, but it's not really me. I have people ask me to come and hang out in the pub 5 minutes up the road from me, and I'll be like, no, kind of just going to watch some stuff on Netflix. So it's unlikely. So yeah, we get into that a little bit, and I wanted to make sure that's clear. That it's never meant as an insult. It's just tough when people beautifully and wonderfully supportively are saying, "Hey man, you should come to Australia." It's like, dude, I'd love to, but I've not got any time off. And I'm not touring, so unless I'm being flown out there like for an acting gig or a podcast and being paid to go there, then that's cool. I'm up for that. But yeah, man, I can't just go places for no reason. That's weird. But anyway, we get into loads of subjects like that, and I think you're going to enjoy it. Check Jean Grey out on social media. In fact, I play a song of hers in this because her song Killscreen is one of my favourite rap songs of recent years, and I think it's a banger. So we dropped that in the middle. It's a long podcast because we had a long chat, and as you will see, we could have chatted for about 3-4 hours more. Enjoy. This is the Distraction Pieces Podcast, episode 177. I'll be back at the end to tell you more stuff. Oh, before I do, actually, I should mention we have the last of my club night, the We Are Lizards club night at the Book Club in Hoxton on November 25th. It's the last of the year, so please come out, hang out. I'm there all night, so if you want any photos or stuff signed for Christmas presents or personalised, just come down. That's all free. There's no meet and greet charges. I don't like any of that nonsense. I'm telling you where I'll be. Come up and approach me politely and as a human, and we'll just have a chat and have a good night. But I'll also be putting on a rubber lizard mask and playing all of your favourite songs. So come to the Book Club on November 25th for We Are Lizards, the last of the year. With Chris and Stu will be there DJing. All sorts. We've got Hugo from the Maccabees. We've got Lindy Layton. We've got DJ Destruction. We've got Discotech Credits. It's going to be a hell of a night. And as I said, it's our last one of the year. So November 25th. I will see you all then. I'm shooting a film in Paris these coming weeks. And I'm waking up in France and then travelling straight from France to the Book Club to do the club night. So I can't wait to see you all and to celebrate. So yeah, anyway, that's all irrelevant. This is episode 177 of the Distraction Pieces Podcast with Jean Grey. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. So I'm joined by Jean Grey. How are you?
I'm good. I just came from my family's party downstairs. We're throwing a party in the hotel. So,
it is wonderful. I mean, we've been chatting online for ages, and we spoke on the phone once on my radio show in the UK. But I was glad that the first time we were going to meet was in New York. I was glad it was in Brooklyn, and then I was surprised it was a family party in the lobby of my hotel.
That's what I like to set up a family feel. I like some Dennis Edwards to be playing when I walk in.
Yeah, it was amazing. That I thought I'll go down to the lobby and wait for you, so there's like, you know where you're going and all that kind of thing. And I got there a little early, and I was sitting there as the very British, a white person in the room in the corner, and then I just started laughing out loud.
because they played some Jill Scott, who I love, but my friend Chris, who does the podcast sometimes, doesn't know that Jill Scott and Gil Scott Heron are two different people. So he will say Jill Scott Heron.
No, we're done.
So,
we're done here.
Yeah, exactly. It's unacceptable.
Do you let him just keep doing that?
Stu allowed it for a couple of times for our own entertainment because it's hugely amusing. But as soon as he did it on the podcast, that's not a different Jill person. Scott Heron. Jill Scott. But again, as soon as Jill Scott came on, I was like. So I'm then the weird dude in the corner laughing to myself as if I'm waiting to be invited into the party. So
it was good. It was a good look.
It was, I mean, there was a buffet.
There was a very small buffet. I'm assuming there's mac and cheese in there. I'm not being, this is not a racially profiling, I'm not racially profiling food. I'm just saying I know there's mac and cheese in there.
It's got to be. I saw literally a tray of four cupcakes.
Oh.
I just don't make cupcakes, right? If you're only making four, just don't. Yeah, that's cupcakes. Really, that's going to cause some Lord of the Flies type.
It's just for Cheryl?
Yeah.
All right.
The one that's into her cupcakes.
I don't know.
So how are you? Are you well?
I'm really good. I'm having a really good 2 weeks so far. Yeah. I was in the middle of, composing and scoring. Wyatt Cenac has a new web series called AKA, and it's like a reluctant superhero.
Yeah.
So I don't know why they waited until like they had a week.
Yeah.
Left to go, and then
quickly. Can you?
I'm like, can you do this?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. And then I looked at the notes, and it was like, you know, music was like in place was like, here's The Dark Knight, and here's I was like, it's Hans Zimmer.
Yeah,
you want me to? So it was like 16 pieces, arranging
pressure. Right?
Yeah, it was quite a fucking bit.
I want to go for something like the greatest film scores of all time.
Can you do that? Can you do that in a week? But it was like orchestra pieces and rap pieces and new age pieces. And it was like a jazz compositions.
Yeah.
And I was like, so I broke my brain pretty much. And then at the end of that week, like, I was like, okay, it's like that 5 hours to go. And then looked up at the calendar in my office and saw like there were no free days. And I was like, okay, I got to go right back into this. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to cancel a few things.
Right.
Because I don't want to do this for another month.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are very music related.
Yeah.
And that doesn't get me further to where I'm trying to be. And I think it was the first time either ever or in a long time that I've been like, you have to not do these things and you have to feel okay about them.
Yeah.
And then you've got to take time to just live and then really just work at the things you want to work on.
It's massive. I think, I mean, I have to apologize in advance that this is going to be a massive love-in now because we both
I know that you are a great person to talk to this about.
That's it. I mean, because that's it. I think when we kind of met over social media, I guess, it was when we were both kind of getting slightly frustrated at the fact that, and it's beautiful that people know you for one thing, but then the frustration of wanting to do many things and people wanting to kind of put you in a box or restrict you. And I completely understand.
I know that you do.
I've not gigged for 3 years now, and I had to.
And how do you feel?
I this is going to sound harsh, but I've not missed it once yet.
No, I know that you feel great.
Yeah,
I know that you feel great about it.
Yeah,
because you did that thing when you did that thing, and it was wonderful.
Yeah,
and okay.
But again, literally today, and another thing that we've connected over is being slightly. We run our own social media, so we have a very honest, true voice, and sometimes get a bit harsh with people who are being lovely. But
I think we're very much in the same and being like it's not just being harsh; it's just being really upfront and honest. And not that we're not unkind people. I usually the most loving people, but are also like, you know what? I don't really have time for any of this other shit. In order for us to progress and do other things, we need to get to the fucking point, which is like, no, you're fucking wrong, or that's stupid.
Yeah.
And it's okay completely. To say that. It's okay.
And the bluntness is... Rudeness isn't needed.
That's different.
But bluntness is at times needed because on your social media or on my social media, I'm aware of everything I put out there. And I will, for example, put out that I'm not doing gigs articulately and politely and softly many times. And people won't all see it, which is fine because I see everything I put out. They don't see everything I put out. That's perfectly natural.
Right.
But that means there does need to be a point. Like, I literally today I posted some stuff from walking around New York.
Ooh, it's party.
Let's see what's going on.
Is it Cheryl?
Hello?
She's calling for cupcakes. I hope.
No, I didn't call for an iron. Thank you.
Do you need an iron?
I don't need an iron.
Uh-oh.
But they...
How nice of them.
It's nice of them to offer an iron. And there must be a spare iron at the party. But yeah, literally today I had someone, and again, it's not a mean or cruel comment or offensive in any way, just saying, dude, you need to come to Detroit. And I just replied saying, I've got no reason to come to Detroit.
In
a polite way.
Usually, and I'm sure it's like this for you as well, I let about 25 of those build up.
Oh, hang on. It's fine, but because I've got a backup recording, but that stopped working. I need to switch.
Of course it did.
There we go. Sorry, continue. So the hang on. This is
it's
there.
Got it.
Sorry. So the backup recording will have started us off, but yeah, continue. Where were we?
letting that thing build up when people are like, "Oh, you should come to, or you should do this."
Yeah.
And so I let it go. Because some days I'm just like, I'm not going to deal with it. And usually it's that one person out of like, when it hits like 25. And I'm like, for what?
Yeah.
Why? For what? My answer is like, I'm also a fan of people. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan of many people.
Yeah, sure.
And I keep up with what they're doing and what they're not doing.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why that's not possible in this day and age where basically all we're doing is keeping up with what people are doing.
Yeah. I mean, it's a forever frustrating thing on social media. And again, it's people can say, oh, it's small problems to have, but they're still real. But even when I was
everybody's
touring,
problems are everybody's problems.
Exactly.
And they're not, you know.
So when I was touring, the classic thing that it's been discussed a million times in a million interviews, but as soon as you post where you're touring, the first 10 comments are from where you're not touring, saying, why aren't you coming here? And it's like, man, I was excited about this.
I was excited about
going there. And now I'm like, why am I even bothering? Why am I even leaving the house?
I think it's just a general thing. Like, you know, and when I was just doing that, I was never kind of just doing that, but more with more of a focus on a rap career. People are always like, you know what you should do?
Yeah.
You should do comedy, or you should go write for, or you should. I'm like, okay. And now they're like, you know what you should do?
Come back.
You should not do that anymore. I'm like, how? Okay. So it's there's no pleasing or getting to any, you know, getting through the way you want to once people. I think that's generally my fight, and some days it doesn't feel bad, and some days it does. And I think it feels great when I'm allowed to be in situations where people don't have those restrictions, and you know, will invite me to do something or be on something, and I'll be like, "What do you want me to do?" And they're like, "I don't know.
Yeah,
you tell me. I never know what you're going to do."
Again, despite how negative we may sound here at points, it's working.
Like, it's working.
The list of things I've got to talk to you about is huge and vast. So that shows that it's working.
Good.
That shows that you are doing all these different things in different areas.
I hope it's just three things, but with really big font.
Yeah.
It's just really spaced out.
It's just a one letter per line. And it's
it's a very long note. But the thing, I think I was discussing it with a guy, Doc Brown, and we came up with the term that it's a case of what station people got on your train at.
Yeah.
And that's where they always want to go back to, because that's where they live. That's where they're from. That's
I think it's a combination of that, and I think it also depends on the person.
Yeah.
And I think it's how many stops they allow their own train to stop at.
Yeah,
I think that becomes a very, very different thing.
Yeah.
Someone who's willing to be like, yes, the world is open to me. I can do many things.
Yeah.
And someone being like, these are the things that you focus on, and then that's it.
Yeah, yeah,
completely. Their perception isn't really open enough to being like, yeah, okay, well, you can do that.
Yeah, yeah. And, exactly that. Realizing that that the reason you were successful as a rapper is because of you.
Right.
It's not because of rap. It's because of you. So that you can then go and do other things.
I'm like, trust me.
Fan base and then go, look, I'm me. Look.
Yeah. It's a very interesting thing to see part of the fan base, you know, not come with you or not translate. And that doesn't bother me at all. Even performing, I've always been more comfortable, like, put me in a room where nobody knows me and nobody knows what I'm gonna do. Usually going on tour, I would never do songs that people had heard. Everybody's like yelling out, so I'm like, this isn't, don't yell out Freebird. It's not gonna happen. I like the uncomfortability and the newness factor with people and with audiences.
It's part of the beauty of festivals, I find, because that gives you more of that audience. It's not your crowd, they're anyone's crowd, so you have to go out there, and one, you have to win them over if that's what your aim is to do, and two, you've got to introduce them to what you are. I guess they're not coming in with any preconceptions or preconceived values.
You have a very loyal audience, though.
I do. They're a good bunch. They seem to
Can I have them?
Yeah, that's it. We're going to pass them on now. That's
wonderful.
We're discuss all this.
They're wonderful. I enjoy an audience who's like, "What are you doing now? We will ride."
Yeah, it's kind of cool, and it's not always the case.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, like, when I first started putting on it, but again, it's one of them things where the more things you do, the more stops you allow yourself to stop at, the more they become open to it. Because when I first started doing a club night and putting on a film night and other things like that, there was an initial bit like, you're doing a club night, but you're an MC, not a DJ.
Why are you doing that?
But it's a night out, isn't
it? Are you going to have a good time?
Why are you doing a film night? You've nothing to do with films. It's like, well, you give it a few years. I will be. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get to that, but we'll talk about it now. Well, I think I heard you on, what podcast did I hear you on? I heard you on a podcast. I can't think which one.
Yes.
And
I love that one.
On a podcast.
A podcast.
And I think realizing, again, going back a few stops on your train makes everything else make more sense. Because, did you grow up in New York, right?
Yes.
But it wasn't. It's not like you were born exclusively into hip hop.
I never just did.
Yeah.
You know, that one thing or was involved in that. And when I was younger, it was I was a dancer, so it was very much my parents' music. So it was jazz music, and my brother, who's into like new wave, and we live in Chelsea, so it's definitely punk.
Yeah.
And yet my brother listened to hip hop, and not like a lot. And even when I didn't start rapping.
Yeah.
I started DJing and making beats before anything else.
Yeah.
And that was kind of I didn't like having to sit around while people listened to beats and decided if they wanted them or not.
Right.
I was like, well, I mean, I could do that.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, no, it wasn't. It was never a limited, like, this is the only thing I want to do. That just didn't make any sense.
I mean, it's an amazing city for that variation, for a variation of cultures and everything. As I was saying, as we were on the way up here, I went for a walk on my spare day yesterday. And I walked.
Oh, I'm also so sorry that I didn't, like, know. Like, I thought you were going to be, like, super busy during the days, but we would have, like, had you over for dinner. It's all good.
It was one of them where I'd kept the Friday free to have some meetings and stuff like that. And when they didn't come in all honesty, it was a bit of a blessing in
that respect because I never scheduled time off.
Yeah. But I walked, and the thing that I loved was I walked from here in Brooklyn, and I started off feeling like I was in a Nas video, and by an hour into my walk, I felt like I was in a Yeah Yeah Yeahs video or a Strokes video. Yeah. I mean, I walked through a Matt Yahoo video on the way there, and
I know exactly where you are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But again, it's that, even that just Brooklyn to Williamsburg type thing, the variation. And then I walked again, I went across the bridge and kind of strolling about. It is a city that's got so many cultures and so many influences so close to each other but so preserved, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And walking through the Hasidic a Jew area, it's like everyone there seemed to be a Hasidic Jew. It didn't seem like a very mixed area, but still, it was literally just a step from...
It's a good cheese plate.
These different... So, you know what I mean? It's respecting
New York is a fantastic charcuterie and cheese plate. Like, you've got all the things. And you can put all the things together. Yeah. Some of the things like to hang out in their own little separate from the rest of the plate, perhaps in a tiny bowl or a ramekin. But it's still all on the same plate, you know?
So, did that allow you to have kind of a broad sphere of influence?
When it's, you know, it's in your face, and that's just kind of it. And also being like, I'm also not from here. I'm incredibly New York, but I'm not, I wasn't born here, and my parents weren't born here.
Yeah.
And, you know, understanding that there's this culture and then that culture, and being able to have two homes at the same time and then be able to travel with them while they were traveling. So there was a lot of, if I had picked just one thing, I think that would have been incredibly weird.
Yeah.
It would have been really weird.
Yeah.
It's been like, really? So that's what you got from all this?
Exactly. It's a weird situation where the only logical outcome was to have many influences and many exciting directions to go in. So where were your parents from, and when did you kind of come to
both from South Africa, and they were at that point traveling overseas and doing Europe and doing gigs, in 1970 went back to Swaziland, so my brother could be born on the continent, and then kept touring, moved back to Europe. Then came back to have me in Cape Town in 76. After the Soweto riots, and they were like, we're going to make the decision to self-exile.
Yeah.
And, I always think that they could have, you know, picked anywhere.
Yeah.
And, it was a lot of my mom going through Europe and being like, I'm uncomfortable. This is not working out for a lot of colorism issues between her and my brother and my dad. And, you know, my dad is experiencing these places in a very, very different way than she is or than my brother is. Yeah. And I think New York was the most logical choice at the time. And then finding the Chelsea and being like, oh, you understand artists. Well, yes, this makes sense.
What an amazing...
Fuck the murders. That's fine.
We can deal with that. As long as we've got art and some level of acceptance. What an amazing a situation to be touring artists that allowed them to look around before choosing, rather than going, well, we're going to go there.
We're going to go there and that's it.
Let's look around and see. Yeah. So, both your parents were jazz musicians.
Yes.
Is that correct? Because, I mean, this is an odd compliment, but my favourite song of all time is Lush Life. And your mum's version is my second favourite.
My favourite song of all time is Lush Life. And, There are only two versions of that song that count for anything.
Right.
And your favorite version is?
Johnny Hartman and John Coltrane.
Right. Yes, of course. God. Great. Well, no, I was going to leave.
Because Nat King Cole's at number three. That's why I was like...
No, that's fine, like, but not at number one.
Yeah. Thank God.
shit. I've been waiting to sing that song, and yeah. I thought that the Blue Note was the show that I actually canceled, and right. We were planning a lot of like jazz stuff, and I was like, I don't know if they're expecting a lot of rap. They're maybe going to get two rap songs, but the rest of it, I don't know. I'm laying on pianos; it's going down.
Amazing.
But that song, and my mom always told me you have to be a certain age to be able to sing that song. Yeah. You have to have enough life experience, you got to understand what the fuck that song is about.
Yeah, 100%.
And it was, you know, it things like that, learning how to appreciate music and know it, but also being like a 10-year-old who loves Lush Life.
Yeah.
And we're like, what's your favorite song? That's a little off-putting.
But it is one, I said, the fact a life experience is the perfect term because you have to have enough good and bad life experience, not just bad life. Again, you often think with the blues that you have
to live through
some pain, but with Lush Life, it's that
balance and these things and where would I rather be and what would make this feel better.
It's what blew me away. A while back, I was collecting a load of soul and all sorts of just genres of Motown a cappellas. And listening to Michael Jackson as a young kid singing these songs that have such deep meaning, and it felt like he completely got it, and it was mind blowing to hear, as you said, a 10-year-old singing these songs and going, "No, that feels like a 40-year-old singing
with that kind of sensibility and understanding of it," and you're like, Michael's already been through a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
You don't sound like that unless you've been through a bunch of shit.
Yeah. So you, as a family, you found yourself in New York. Mm-hmm. And there were kind of arts communes and communities and that coming. Yeah. And that was very much where you came up. Again, from when I found you musically, my image was obviously grew up in the Bronx, rap, hip hop, all of this, because that was the stuff I got on the train, that was the first exposure. But it was more. There was a lot of different artistic influences there, right?
And very, very, openness. Very, very much. And you know, like I was talking about, you know, being in dance 5 or 6 days a week. So there's a lot of classical music and understanding of that and going to school or even just piano lessons. So a lot of classical music and opera. There was a lot of opera. Sometimes my musical, like picking up on things and hearing it and being like, where the fuck do I know that? Just life. It was just there. Yeah. But a lot of choral arrangement and musical training.
That's amazing.
But all of those things, I think, lending to the idea that even when it was just rap, that it was me putting all of these pieces and things into it. So it's very interesting to be like, hey, it's like, it's rap, and but even your first perception was like, you know, this New York completely hip-hop.
Yeah.
Just straight-up hip-hop.
Yeah.
And it was never that.
That's what's beautiful and rewarding. I was going to say that you can put in all of your influences, but I think it's more that you can't leave out all of your influences.
Right.
I remember when our first record came out, and it was hip hop, electronica, or whatever else, and the buzz I got when people were referencing punk because that's what I grew up listening to. And in my mind, I'd not made a punk record in any way. Yeah. And they were like, the punk sensibilities, this and I'm like,
I don't know.
It's getting true. That's so happy because I always tried to be in punk bands and could never make it work. Yeah. Never done. It was when I found hip hop that I found my drive in writing and that kind of thing. It was like, it meant the world to then go, all right, so that's in there. That's that influence that I thought I'd left behind.
And no, it was there. You couldn't stop it.
There. And similar with, I hastened to
I
guess,
thought that immediately. It felt like that immediately to me.
I love that. But, I mean, I'd guess that not that many kids growing up in New York were getting exposed to classical and opera and things like that. Was that the case, or did it seem like a kind of unique mix of things?
I think I got more of it.
Yeah.
But it was definitely open to that. You know, I can say that everyone I went to school with, but you know, yes, it was an art school.
Yeah.
But you know, we were singing opera tunes and learning classical music and learning jazz and learning all of these things at the same time. And I think that you know Yiddish songs because it's fucking New York and you randomly have these things in your head, or you're taught these things in elementary school. When I was, my elementary school was a very, very dirty hippie, sort of school. There was lice. Right. We called our teachers by their first name, but musically I learned so much.
Yeah.
Like, Let the Sunshine In, was our graduation walkout song.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Sloop John B, they rewrote it, and that was our, you know, our school song. But we were learning, you know, everything from, there was a lot of John Denver, there was a lot of South African protest songs, I know everything to do at a bar mitzvah and a bat mitzvah. Like it was, my mom was great enough to choose these educational houses that she made sure were very diverse.
Yeah.
And that I would get all of that.
Yeah.
And even if it was my zone school, she was like, no, we're sending you somewhere else.
Yeah.
So, but she was a school teacher first, right, before anything. And she was not trying to let the public schools of New York just complete. She was like, I'm trying to do something here. I don't want you to go out there. She was like, I know you're going to do whatever the fuck you're going to do when you get out there.
Yeah.
And I did. But as long as you're in school for those hours, I need to know that you're not just getting this standard education that they're offering here.
I love it. Just hearing that painting of New York and growing up in all those different communities. I had a journalist on a couple of weeks ago called Soed McHennett, who was the terrorism journalist for the Chicago Post. And one of the things that we talked about in that was the outrage in the UK and in the US now of this fear of immigration and people. They have to, you know, learn our ways, or they have to blend in, or they're doing this or doing that. And it doesn't have to be a case of that at all. I think we can all have our own cultures and learn bits from that. It's not that we all have to. We don't all have to agree.
We don't all have to agree. And I don't want that. No. I don't. Where's the excitement in that?
Exactly.
I don't want everyone to just have to agree. I like the idea of having, you know, to sit down and open conversation and be able to hear other sides of things and other points of view. It can't all be the same thing. Yeah. Nobody wants that. We were driving over the Williamsburg Bridge, and we just stopped at the stoplight. This is last week, The light changed, and we were there for about 2 minutes. And we're not new to New York at all, but I think it's also because of the time and the climate and the amount of diversity that crossed the street and crossed each other, and ages and races. And I was like, that was really really good.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It felt great
yeah.
to be in New York all the time, but then it also introduced, you know, a lot of times we forget that, yeah, these, a lot of motherfuckers are just not, they don't have to see it. They yeah. don't have to see us. They don't have to see anyone else except for themselves all the time.
Yeah.
And there's a very big difference.
It's why I still live in the small town I grew up in, mm-hmm. because it's not terrible, but it's also not the best town.
Yeah.
And it has got a history of voting in right-wing government and council and this kind of thing. And for me, it was a case of, right, if I move to London and worried, I will just think, oh, wow, everything's cool.
It's fine.
Everyone's lovely. There's such mixtures of cultures. Yeah. They're great. And it's like the fact that I get that train home from London at night and people will call me a terrorist for having a beard and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's like makes me go, all right, no, the world isn't. So, like, there's still a long way to go. And that's kind
yeah.
of... That's why I'm scared of going anywhere. Like, if I move to New York or to LA and these beautiful artistic communities, I think I could forget. I mean, the last few years it's become impossible to forget, which
yeah.
so I don't think that's a worry right now, but that was always the kind of thing that was on my mind of
I think that's the one thing. I knew it from touring with my parents
mm.
and but that was a lot of Europe
right.
and I told my mom when I was very young, I was like, I fucking hate Germany. I don't
right.
I hate it here. I hate it here. Please mm. don't bring me.
Yeah.
And she was like, I get it. I get it. And again, different for her
yeah.
than for me.
Yeah.
And yeah, and then touring America, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I had no idea that there were, you know, literally places where we're like, we're not getting out of the van.
Yeah.
No, that's good. I'm yeah. like, I'm too many things to get out here.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, the small changes in New York are nothing compared to the lack of changes in
yeah.
a lot of other places in America. I often forget what I look like. And as I was mm-hmm. on this walk, I was getting into Williamsburg and I was thinking, this is so white and so hipster. And then I'm like,
I'm good here.
This is fine. I was proper kind of, my face had gone more angry and I'm like, everyone's smiling at me. I'm like, oh, right, no, this is
right.
this is the bit that I'm meant to be.
This is me.
This is my people.
These are my people. This is my tribe.
So when did you kind of find hip hop or start going in the direction of rapping, of making rap? Was it when you were, I said, you were making beats and like,
I was making beats and I was DJing and I was in a, my best friend and I at the time had a freestyle group. Freestyle, if anyone is unfamiliar, it was a very popular style of music in the late 80s and the 90s, where stations like Hot 97 was known as Hot Caliente 103.
Right.
So very Dominican and very Puerto Rican.
Yeah.
Freestyle music was huge,
yeah.
and I loved freestyle music.
Yeah,
I was very into freestyle. I was very into house music.
Yeah.
Kind of went to all of those clubs, and again, New York was very different. I don't know how they let us in
right.
to these clubs.
Yeah.
We were like 12 and 13
yeah.
and 14, drinking. You know, New York was a... I don't even know
yeah.
how kids get into clubs now. I'm really hoping it's not the same
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, it's not as easy.
But my boyfriend will have times when he's talking about, like, don't you remember that cartoon or that thing? And he's 8 years younger than me.
Yeah.
And first off, I'm like, I don't remember that. But then he'll be like, what, you were like 12? And then he's like, right, you...
You
were
12,
at
12.
The club. I'm like, yeah, what were you doing? He was like, being a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, New York was a different place. So
yeah.
being open to all those things and, like, you know, that kind of partying. And when I was, like, 13, my mom gave me a set of turntables and a Gemini right. Scratchmaster sampler.
Oh, wow.
and that I thought that was the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah.
You had the A, the B, and the C, and you could like loop up little bits, which was much better than the like I was recording stuff with my brother's equipment, but making a lot of like pause beats with cassette tapes, which is very fucking hard to do with that rewind and play button. So that kind of changed things for me. And it gave me a way to be like, okay, I think I'm doing this for real.
Yeah.
And if I was just looping stuff, then it just naturally led to writing over it. But I didn't like rap in front of anyone else really until I was like 15 or so.
That's still are really young. Again, it's looking back at this.
It's weird because I'm like, it doesn't seem young, but then I'm looking at like a 12-year-old and a 15-year-old right now. I'm like, these are babies.
Yeah.
What was I doing?
And again, just hearing that as, again, looking back into the past, my first EPs and stuff that I made in like 2004 and 2005 were with an ABC loop type thing. Yeah. And literally, you're saying all that, and I'm like, I was doing that like 10 years later than this, and I'm still like, this is amazing.
It's still amazing. It's still amazing when you find it. Were you really doing like that same just straight up like loops?
This silver single CDJ, and I plugged it into like a little recording desk, and it was that. It was exactly that. I found a load of old classical, like all these BBC CDs that were just all old classical stuff, and I'd just loop, and then I'd find a beat that I could get to the same tempo and loop that, and try and piece it all together, and that was...
That's awesome.
But I should have just... It was all laid out before me. I was learning this as if I was inventing it in 2005. This is how to do it.
I mean, yeah, any time you feel like you're doing it, you feel like you're inventing. But the next thing that I got was an SP-1200.
Right.
And that was like such a big step. And then I learned that I hated drum pad machines.
Right.
Yep. I was like... I don't just hitting buttons. I was like, this isn't playing music.
Yeah.
So I gave it to a friend of mine, and I got a keyboard. I got a Ensoniq EPS 16 Plus.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah. Next level.
That's when I was like, okay, I think I do this for real. I really enjoy making beats, and I enjoy making beats for other people now, but also because I want to be on the songs.
Yeah, that's perfect. I mean, so I think I got into you very late, around 2009, 2010. But it's because I was on tour. I remember it really clearly. I was touring Europe at the time, and this even sounds a retro. I had my iPod.
Uh-huh.
It's crazy to think of something that's only for music now.
An iPod. It was just for music. No, that was it. It didn't
do anything else.
It just did one thing.
And my brother, I'd been touring for a year or two at that point, and I'd rinsed all the back catalogue of stuff I had, and my brother put Genius on there and a few other bits, and that was that whole tour was just listening.
Because that was constantly. The iPod.
And it was like it was the new music I had, and that was kind of so. When did you go over to, or when did you become Jean Grey? I guess because that wasn't you started off as in
99.
In 99, wow. Yeah,
in 1999, I had used what is the name until then.
Yeah,
and then I was like, I think it the progression of rap so far and what I was doing with it and being in a group, and I was like, okay, again, I was incredibly reluctant to be in a group first off, and I was like, I already know, I like hanging out, but I don't really like to have to tailor my shit in life in general to what
on
like
people
to, yeah general, to what just, like a group of a, I don't like waiting I just want to come on on
here it is, it's done,
and it's a great name for an album. do it here it is, it's done. Yes, that's generally how I like to work. And then I also discovered that a lot of my ideas and things I were presenting were a lot darker than the tone that the group was taking, which was very lighthearted and fun. And I was like, I don't know if you guys have, like, met me.
Yeah.
But, but there's a lot of, like, murder going on in my songs.
Yeah.
And then you guys are at the club. And then my suggestions are like, let's kill everyone in the club. Is that not?
Yeah.
Is that not? And they're like, that's not a club song. I'm like, well, it could be a club song.
It's set in a club.
It's in a club. It's just that we kill everyone. So I decided to go solo.
Yeah.
And then couldn't pick a name.
Right.
And very good friend Pumpkinhead, who passed a couple of years ago, suggested started going the X-Men route of things, and suggested Miss Marvel, and then we were like, yeah, but we end up on like Jean Grey, and I picked it more for the symmetry,
right?
Because there goes my OCD.
Yeah.
Like it looked, it felt it's good. Nice, yeah. It's you can you can place it for marketing.
Brilliant.
It's great.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'll just change a couple of the letters. And really, are they going to sue me? Like, who at Marvel is really going to care?
Yeah. And that all stayed okay, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You got away with it.
They're great.
Oh, again. Marvel's on my list to get onto, but let's continue on music first. Did you ever, or what were your thoughts approaching live, performing live? Because I think rap is a genre that many times falls short in the live.
That's a really nice way to say
domain.
That.
Yeah, well, you know, but I mean, there are people and. And Ferro Monch is an example I saw at the Jazz Cafe once, just blew me away. And Big Daddy Kane just puts it on live. And,
yes.
But again,
they're great shows.
It is a genre that there's been a lot of, even legends I've gone to see, and I've been like, okay, cool.
That was a boring.
Night. Yeah, it didn't go boring. Anywhere. So, but knowing that you came from many different genres and different areas, was that something on your mind when moving into that realm?
I think I was just comfortable in front of an audience.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter what it was.
Yeah.
Like, I had been on stage doing many different things.
Yeah.
So at that point, I was comfortable. I was fine making jokes.
Yeah.
I was okay trying new things out. And I liked interacting with the crowd. And for me, it was finding out different ways to, and it's not a negative word, as you know it's not, to manipulate
100%
the crowd.
Yeah.
And that was, it became fascinating for me. And being like, what am I going through? What mood do I want to leave this room with?
Yeah.
And I want to leave just blood on the stage.
Yeah.
That, and no one wants to come up after me.
Yeah.
They never put me on early in the show. You know what this is.
Yeah.
And I want everyone to be in the same place where I wanted to take them to a place where, and especially because for me, there was no money to make videos.
Yeah.
There was no budget to do anything else.
Right, of course.
So aside from being extremely visual, having to be, you know, write really visual shit, it was when we get to the live show, like, no, you're coming with me for this whole experience.
Yeah.
And but it took me a long time to nail it,
to really get it. But it becomes that manipulation becomes an obsession. I've told this a few times on the podcast, but fuck 'em. when I did at the Edinburgh Fringe. It was it was a spoken word show, but it was the same room, the same venue every night for 19 nights in a row.
Yeah.
So the same lighting crew, the same sound crew, and that just blew my mind. It was the best. Like, we ended up filming it because
I got 10
shows in. I was like, this will never get better, because it got to the point where I was manipulating the interaction to the extent I was manipulating the ad-libs, because I knew if I paused at this certain point, someone would laugh or say something, and I can
have a response every time.
So that kind of thing.
It's a weird Groundhog Day situation.
I can refine this and see exactly how this works.
Yeah.
And again, that shouldn't be seen as a bad thing, because it's manipulation, but it's craftsmanship.
I'm in complete control, and emotionally, I can take us to a place, and you've got to be with me on this journey. And I think it was that, and it was a challenge for me. I wanted it to be a challenge for the audience.
Yeah.
To my roller coaster is to, you know, hit you with discomfort.
Yeah.
And then be like, oh shit, I don't know what now. Now I'm in my feelings. Wait, how are my feelings all over the place?
Yeah.
And inevitably, I was like, if I don't make anyone cry during a show, then I have fucked up.
Right, amazing.
And then got to bring it back up. And someone, you know. The idea of working to. That's my superhero power.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is being able to control emotions.
I love it.
That was my favorite thing. To the point now where there was saying before a show, be like, I'm going to do some. Tonight is levitation.
Right.
And, you know, someone after the show be like, I felt like we were levitating. I was like, I know. I just did that to you.
That's the beauty of it. That's. The level of intricacy and thought that isn't present in a lot of live shows.
I've seen very many rap shows. I didn't want to be someone just walking around on the stage. Yeah. Or if I was just going to walk around on the stage, then I was going to have, you know, four other songs around it where there were so many things happening that for that, maybe I am just walking around the stage and you don't care at that point. This is great. I'm emotionally spent at this point.
Yeah.
Please don't hit me with any more.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, there's a time and a place to do it. But, you know, like I'm a fan of people. I like music. I don't necessarily go to a lot of shows.
Yeah.
I don't know how people do it.
Yeah,
I can't stand up and look at music for that long. That's fantastic.
Yeah,
I'm very proud.
Yeah,
but I do like to be entertained when I go out, and I think I also didn't want it. I never want it to just be the crowd is entertained and I'm not.
Yeah, completely. And that's what. If particularly if you're going to be touring as well, that's what keeps it fresh. That's what keeps it's, it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I had a question and. I'm going to put it here, but I'm going to put a theory on it as well from what I feel I've already learned from this conversation. Well, I wanted to ask about how you found it trying to kind of gain respect to make waves as a rapper that is female.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've got from our conversation so far is I think your main aim would have been to gain respect from yourself. And to achieve what you want rather than what fuck anyone else is.
It was never that. It was never that for me.
Because it is a tough, particularly I would imagine in the 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah.
I can't say female rappers because that's not a thing. But whenever we're talking about our rappers. Your name will come up in some of my favourites, and there's not an abundance of female rappers that I'm looking at purely on technique and ability and everything else. So how was that? Was that a thing you were aware of, or was it a struggle?
I only became aware of it when things started going like to the media and press, and I was like, what are they talking about?
Yeah.
We're really going to do it like that?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
It's something that to this day is prevalent on the social media. Again, I've seen and jumped in and joined in.
Yes,
many
you have. And thank you.
But it's often well-intended, but that doesn't mean it shouldn't be called out on. When say, right. you're one of my favourite female rappers, it's like, why do you need the female bit?
You don't have to say, yes, you don't have to say that. And I think it's interesting because it's both men and women.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be like, you don't understand that, you know, you're there's a level of misogyny that's so ingrained mm-hmm. that seems fine.
Yeah.
And there's no need to do it. And if I present it to you in a different way and say, well, what about this career or in dentistry? Is there a need to say that? Yeah. Or does it sound fucking ridiculous?
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, it was... It was winning over my challenges and getting to the next level and being like, I did that. Let's see what else I can do. And it was always either for me or extreme competition. Mm-hmm. Very competitive.
Yeah, yeah.
And my job was always to be like, I have to kill the other person.
Yeah.
Or I didn't do my job.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very interesting thing that it's never... Because I'm a woman, it just wasn't thought of in that way. And I'm like, I'm here to kill everyone.
Yeah.
always, whether it's a show, whether it's on a song. Yeah. And if that didn't happen, then I didn't do my job. I might as well either stay home or take me off of the song.
Yeah.
That's just a thing now. I just want to always be the best that I can possibly be.
Yeah. That's amazing. Well, I mean, it's become a kind of a mock catchphrase on the podcast that when we're at the hour mark, I say we're getting towards the hour mark, I start to wrap things up. But are we going along? So if it's okay...
No, let's keep going.
Would you mind if I play a song in this section as well?
What are you going to play?
I want to play Killscreen because it's literally one of my favourite tracks.
You're a good... I really just enjoy you as a person.
Honestly, it was the track that really just... And we'll talk about the video and everything that comes with it mm-hmm. and the fact that it was at a point where you were really making big efforts to be an independent artist and still create big things and extravagant things. So anyway, we're going to play a Killscreen now.
Rebel shit, Mojave rock, got polyglots who mollywop you till your body pop. I'm never sick, but my temperature drop is 7 up. 1056, hell, praise the rock. I ain't a savior, just your neighbor like Amazing Peter. Mine is the spider bite, the webs are aunt and uncle neither. Save the reason and the need to tuck the dynamite to even up the non-believers. Humble season was cool, sure. Now I'm seeing North Shore faces, and y'all sure? Turn around and walk 4 paces, I walk 4 or 5. Y'all 86 in all cases. I'm the figure 8 sideways, always ageless. Y'all in the club, aimless, blind, spade shit. My time is space mix, record a rhyme on spaceships. You way behind like you caught a ride on a slave ship. I'm the modern anomaly, breezing Amelie, faceless. Represent the basement, raised up, cageless, limitless, reminiscent of rapists. Boundaries, got none. Rock, paper, shotgun. Octung, baby, not an 80D 80s, baby, I'm not from. Rated G catering errors. I was the type of New Yorker rhyming the night in the park and hiding a knife in the hair. And even though mama was careful, I would be fighting so often, finding the light in the dark was time and just life in the mirror. Mirror. Reflection, infinite, Escher. In the air, we are who we are. Kesha, late night dive bar, sipping on a Vespa. I'm Bond and the villain in one time bomb tester. Dress mismatched like Confederate soldiers. Told y'all best to think fast, this level is over. Going for the kill screen, fist full of quarters. Billy Mitchell, I'm a fiend. Jumping barrels, famous sources, was a preteen prodigy. Plethora of knowledge, I don't mean like Albert Johnson. I mean Gene was on to college. I'll never respect a comment from a novice. I'll never be just a common denominator, I promise. I was nominated flyer, so you see I'll take us higher. The defiant one, the phoenix from the fire. Hell mouth Leviathan, only get killed at the end of time. So I'm buying some. This is heavy metal. Ryerson or Reitman. A mobile 81 either is right, man. Lifespan's eternal ever since I touched the mic stand. Put the mic in my right hand. Left hook a nightmare. Rest good, hype man. Genie take it easy like bikinis on some white sand is on me. Combi, sipping on a zombie. Condé, last, no bath zone spilling in my flask. I'm appealing to your class. Laugh now, get shot later with sedatives. Medicate to torture you some more, so all you better live. Edifice, living in a world full of Oedipus. Whole relative, melanin, nepotism. Tell the kids hell is in. Check the prisons. I wanna teach particle physics business just as a better business class. Syllabus rise up. You wanna get your Philistine thighs up. My ability's high, fuck, still willing to try luck. I wish I had guillotine garage doors, mass carnage, barnyard parties, animals, carnivores, trash, garbage, scars, guard hardies, mandibles, parting jaws, bleeding your dryer convictions. The art of war.
You're gonna have plenty of reasoning. I'm gonna show you cards and spades and lying for the next 50 years. I'm gonna pay you back for every lie you told.
I'll kill you!
And that was it.
Wow, that was so good.
The magic of technology is that obviously we've not played anything here in the room, but we're just continuing the conversation.
I played it really fast in my mind.
Yeah, that's good. But that track, I mean, I love it as a track, but equally the thing that excited me first was the intensity and craziness of the video. It's a big, it's an extended video. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
How was that? I mean, let's kind of fast forward through some bits that you had amazing success in your career. Again, working with and praised from people like, or everyone from Pharaoh, a Mos Def, Talib, mm-hmm. all sorts of amazing people, Atmosphere, all sorts. Mm-hmm. And you'd made a point of going, right, I'm doing this myself. It's not going to be a label. It's not going to be a big publicity thing. I'm not going to strive even for what I'm seeing on TV. Because the video for Killscreen couldn't be on TV. Let's be clear about that. That's why that seems relevant.
But I think the general idea had always been, well, you guys are not okay with me being me. Trust me, we don't even have to go down a list of things. I'm going to come in this room and be like, hey, listen, you don't want me. I can tell you, unless you want to do some crazy fucking groundbreaking shit, which, of course, no one was willing to do. Maybe with someone who did not have a vagina, mm-hmm. that could have worked out.
Yeah.
I just knew that there was no way that was going to happen.
Or everyone's up for crazy groundbreaking shit, but then they're not up for what's actually written under that title.
Right.
They love that title. Let's definitely do that. Here's what it actually is. Oh, no, we definitely
can't. No, don't want to do that. We can't do that.
But I like the title. Let's put something else under that.
Yes, exactly. let's get the manufactured version of that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's sad because it would have been really easy.
Yeah.
I'm like, I never needed, you know, millions of dollars to do anything because I had been so. But I think that's the idea of being punk and being DIY is that you're like, I'm just gonna fucking do this shit.
Yeah.
Myself.
Yeah.
So that's what it's always felt like.
Which sounds great, but comes at its own cost.
Yeah. it literally comes at its own cost.
100%.
And it's hard, and the Warner situation had happened, the Blacksmith situation had happened, and they were fine. It just wasn't for me. It just really wasn't for me. And I also think the idea that it was weird at that point when it got to like, hey, you know, It's Quali's protege, and I was like, "Oh, that's a weird. How did we get there? Yeah. That's not true at all." So there were certain things about major label deals that mm-hmm. just didn't appeal to me in general.
Yeah,
the money was great. I didn't like operating on schedules or deadlines from other people. I'm good at operating on
yeah.
on mine. And I think, you know, the having conversations like, well, what does a single look like? And I was like, eh.
Oh.
Listen, I'm never going to really fit in here
yeah.
to the machine. So I'm fine operating outside of the machine,
yeah.
particularly with rap music.
Yeah.
I realize that there are other things that I need to do that I need to be inside of the machine.
Yeah.
For this,
I'm learning that yes, completely as well.
It's a very yeah. interesting thing.
There's many worlds.
Many, many worlds. And for that world, I was like, this... I can do this myself.
Yeah.
It's okay.
It's a weird one with... Because, again, I'm not... And I don't think either of us are here. I'm not against major labels
no.
or labels. But
no.
there's good and bad within them. And one of the things that's always confused me with labels is there always needs to be a comparative.
Yes.
That you're the new this.
What
or
is,
you're the protege of. Or you're
right.
our version of...
We need to make it we need to be comfortable with saying it is a version of this, or it comes from someplace, or it's co-signed by yeah. Someone and
yeah. And particularly yeah. as you said, having a vagina, there's a smaller
that,
pool of people they're going to be comparing you to. It's going to be
right.
you're the new this, like
right.
there's literally going to be four people they're picking from every time. It's like, well,
right.
I can't be like though, or not everyone can be a derivative of those four people.
Yeah.
There has to be new people to
yeah.
to spread this out and to build
and
this.
I think the most used adjectives with me were she's crazy.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, we have to stop saying that.
Yeah.
Crazy is a very different thing
yeah.
than what you're presenting.
Yeah.
Me as. And if you got to learn some other adjectives. You have to learn how to say, I don't understand necessarily,
yeah. mm-hmm.
or this is a new thing for me, but you can't just call all of the things that you don't understand or that you're not comfortable with crazy.
Yeah.
That's not all right.
No,
because
100%.
Then that's how it translates into the world.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, don't work with Jean. She's crazy. I'm like, what? Okay.
Not like that.
Not okay. I'm very sympathetic. I have a brother who is schizoaffective and has had many psychotic breaks over the years.
Yeah.
And it's a lot to deal with and a lot
yeah.
to handle. And so, you know, automatically sensitive when I'm like, all right, y'all, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Don't do that. And there's a difference, you know, in between... There are a lot of people, when Killscreen came out, who were like, that's weird,
mm-hmm.
or what drugs are you on,
yeah.
all of these things, and I'm like, but, like, you know, like, Fight Club exists, right?
Yeah.
That's all single frame cuts, like, what, okay, that's fine, that
yeah.
guy's a genius.
Yeah, yeah.
So what makes me crazy
yeah.
for
yeah.
doing that?
Yeah. That's mad. So what have you, how do you feel about, I guess it's something you've stepped away from now anyway, but how was your experience of releasing rap independently? Because I think there's so much that can be done, but equally one of the hardest things, and again, it's something I watched with absolute fascination, like that there's been a lot of your social media interactions I've watched silently, like as some kind of creep, but because it is a fascinating thing where
yeah.
there will be people saying, oh, I'm your biggest fan, I'd love some new music from you, when two tweets ago was you posting new music,
mm-hmm.
and it's like that fan isn't being mean or cruel, but that is heartbreaking as well. If you've slaved over something and then someone's
it's...
like, be cool if you did some new music. It's like,
why won't you do any new music?
Yeah.
Why won't you do any new music? The idea, first off, just the idea of releasing things independently, great.
Mm.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
My own schedule. I do whatever the fuck I want. And I think that's all I really wanted in life. Well, that, and then, like, a lot of money.
And again,
but
our schedule makes it sound like you'll be slacking off, but there was points where you were releasing
in
quick succession.
I've never stopped putting out music since 1996.
Yeah.
There has not been one year that went by where there's not music, so it's
yeah.
a very weird thing. yeah. for people to go back and be like, why did you stop? I'm like, what? I have no idea what you're to stop. What? Yeah. When? I didn't stop. I never stopped.
Yeah.
Independently, the only thing is, you know, having the frustration of being like, it would be great if I could make this this vision mm-hmm. a full vision.
Yeah.
The issue comes with, well, I would be able to do that if the fans would buy the music mm-hmm. or just in general support the things.
Yeah.
And then this terrible circle of them being like, where's new music? And I'm like, it's right there.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, how do we know you have it? I'm like, you're following me on the thing.
I don't know what else I can do.
The thing.
Yeah.
So, just that weird cycle of being like, I feel like, you know, I think rap for me became a lot of dealing with theoretical fans.
Right.
You like the idea of
Jean Grey. Yeah.
But
yeah,
you don't.
Yeah.
Like me.
And again, it's that weird thing of, in many ways, that's not a problem either. Like, it's acceptable to, but as long as everyone's aware of what things are, there's artists. I've said this before that I don't mind if people unfollow me on social media because you don't have to love my social media.
No.
There's artists that I'm a huge fan of, and their social media isn't for me.
And I don't
love their records still, but I'm not into that, and I don't follow them there, and so on and so forth. Or there's artists that I love a one record, and the rest isn't for me. Particularly as an artist who will change in styles, change genres, and move things about. There's nothing wrong with people having specific eras that they're into, but if they're then saying, "Oh, we need this from you," it's no. Put the record you like on again. You've got it. I didn't take it off you.
You have it. There's you know, when I go back and, you know, I sometimes, and you see when I do this and when I don't, and maybe it'll be like every few months at this point, and I'm like, you guys, really, there's a lot of albums.
Yeah.
You can go put them on.
Yeah.
When I feel like working up, maybe I will make something new, but maybe I won't. I definitely won't do it as, hey, I'm pouring all of myself into rap music, because there's no payoff.
Mm.
And I'm old enough to know that that's not a good idea.
Yeah.
It's not good for my time. It's not good for my soul.
Yeah.
It's not good for the other things I want to get to. It's not good for my relationship.
Completely into this one project.
Into this one thing.
Doesn't have the end goal that you would.
The financial return doesn't mm-hmm. add up. And it's yet another kind of lost thing.
And they're valid points that people get awkward about when you discuss, and that's been the case ever since. A lot of money or the idea of paying for music became a blurred line, and
things change.
I don't think it should be something that people are nervous to talk about. It's fine if people choose to make music for no financial gain, but you can't request that someone do that as their full-time job.
Yes,
if you're an artist full-time, you can't do that.
It's not possible. Because I, you know, Those things don't sustain life.
Yeah.
And that's not saying it's all about money, but it's saying
that money is a factor in your life.
It is a factor because it's a job. Money is a factor in any job that you're taking, and especially if you're taking a full time job.
Yeah.
You know, if I was, you that's know, 20 and just an intern, that's fine. But it's not being a rap intern. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting any, you know, I can't put these credits towards my rent. It's not going to work like that.
Yeah.
But I really think, like, I will always enjoy the art form. What I love the most about rap, which is not the raw emotion or not any of those things. Yeah. It's the pure technicality of using words.
Yeah.
And that will never be a thing that stops with me.
Yeah.
So when I feel like doing it, then I can. But I never wanted it to be like, this is my job and then that's the end all be all. I'm like, okay, I'm doing this now. And then I will stop doing that, and then I'll might do it sometimes, but I'll definitely move on to something else.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
there's more.
And again, or there really is more, and the more with you is almost endless, from TV shows to acting.
Are you talking about yourself?
and from audio books and all the different variations, and that's hugely exciting, right? That we're in a time where that can be a thing.
Yeah, I guess there's always a reason that things take the time that they do, and I think I always say this, that I was waiting for technology to catch up with me.
Yeah.
Because I tend to get turned down many times, and as I'm going into this new life, like I've been doing so many things, and yeah, there's like comedy and acting and writing and doing like doubled over or doing like a full on live talk show. And I'm like, I'm running these full on productions, these 2-hour productions, like they're on air shows.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
These things are tiring and they're a lot of work.
It's,
and I'm doing all the like the video editing and, you know, it's probably something I love with equal appreciation as the technicality of words is video editing, which is why I wanted to do something like Kill Screen. And it's pushing myself and being like, how can I, you know, make different things, do different things. But yeah, starting to see the issues of getting into a new world and introducing yourself. And my biggest issue right now, I think, for the past 5 years has been that I've been pitching these ideas and have consistently been told, like, oh, you can't do this or that. Like, we don't have... I don't understand how that would work.
Yeah.
And then watching all of these shows happen and being like, you motherfuckers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I guess that is this business.
Right, yeah.
So... It's a very interesting place to be in.
Yeah.
To be able to get in the room. I just got a show picked up. Fucking finally.
Amazing.
you know, to get to this point, it's being in all these rooms and people are like, well, you can, you know, get a meeting. But most of the meeting is like, okay, so then, like, how does music come into play in this? How does rap come into play? Mm-hmm. I'm like, it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's no rap in it.
Yeah, it's just, to do with that. This
it's something different.
Yeah.
Than rap.
Yeah.
Does that happen with you?
Yeah.
A lot?
It's hard. You kind of, I want to have a puppet doing it. So this isn't Scroobius Pip. This is this guy. So just talk to him about it, and he's going to tell you all about it.
Here's the joke. So the thing that got picked up is literally puppets.
Amazing.
Because I was like, if you won't listen to me, I will put some shit on my hand. And they were like, yes, great.
I told you, that's the only way. That's the only way it'll work. How strange. I love it. Well, I will... Let's start to wrap things up now, but I want to wrap things up by getting extremely excited about comics and being someone that took your name from a Marvel character to you fought Deadpool in a Deadpool comic.
Yeah.
How's that feel? I think I felt bad because of knowing all the stuff you do that you put so much work
into. That was my
when
best
thing. When you
posted
about that, I was like, that's the most excited I'd been, like, oh my god, this is the best. How did that even come about? And more Marvel stuff.
Yeah,
there's been some
and
covers
more,
and all sorts of
yes.
Or this year, I think.
Yes. So Mike Hawthorne, who drew that issue of Deadpool, I believe that he was he had heard Assassins.
Yep.
And sent me this amazing drawing.
Right.
And it was me and just gun just bullets everywhere and dead bodies. I was like, that's what I feel like in my head, Mike. How did you know? It's beautiful. I love it. You captured my true essence. so So we became friends, and I was working on another album at the time, and the idea that Cake or Death was supposed to be the beginning of the story of this assassin.
Yeah.
This long, like, 20-year story that I've been telling that right. none of it goes in order.
Right.
So we started talking about, you know, how he would use these, do new visuals for it, and I was like, this is perfect.
Yeah.
And ended up not, and my mom passed, and a lot of things happened. My mom actually sang on Cake or Death, and it's a lot of the reason that the album kind of...
Yeah.
I was like, let me just put this down, because this can't be one of those things that I put out and gets lost, because I'll kill everyone.
So
we started talking, and we were talking one day. I was like, he was like, I'm drawing Deadpool. I was like, do you think that you could, if I could get a picture of, like, me and, like, Deadpool just making out, like, that'd be really great. Or, like, maybe, like, we're in, like, a couple's photo, if you can do that, and then I can just put that up. And he was like, hold on. So about a month later, he sent me a couple of sketches, and he was like, I'm doing this. How do you feel about it? And I was just bawling. I was like, this is beautiful. It was incredible.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It was the perfect thing to do.
Yeah, 100%.
No, not to make out with Deadpool. To punch Deadpool in the face.
Of course. Yeah. So, and then there's been... a cover recently, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what was that one? And how did that come about?
It's one of the variant
the
covers.
The hip-hop variant that they did.
Yes.
There were around the Jules ones and a few different. And how was that?
I didn't know it was happening.
Oh, really?
No. I had no idea.
Because the way they do them is they base them on either albums you've done in the past or artwork or things like that.
I had no idea. And it was based on artwork that Oliver Barrett did for, I think it was like a front page of a Bandcamp release. But the artwork that he did was so dope.
Yeah, yeah.
That came from a photo, like one of my favorite photos. So it's crazy to see like the trip that this photo has taken.
Yeah.
I was walking around South by Southwest when I went for about 2 years. I thought it was hilarious if I would, you know, put fake blood on myself and just walk around in places and not, like, say anything about it and just carry on as normal.
Yeah.
And that was one of the nights, and I was standing next to a policeman. I was like, take this picture with me, smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
So, it became that art, and then it became the cover of Jean Grey issue one.
That's amazing, right?
Which is insane. Is insane. So I'll be at Comic-Con again at the Marvel booth, which is weird.
That's fantastic.
It's always weird.
So, I mean, I'll round.
I'm not in Deadpool.
You're not in No, I mean, me neither.
How are you not in Deadpool?
I did audition for
Deadpool
too. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. But yeah, I'll tell you more afterwards.
Oh,
but
okay.
Audition for Deadpool 2. I didn't get it, but again, it's exactly the same. I was like, how amazing is this? Just to be in this world.
I'm really proud of you.
Engaged in it. Thank you very much.
I really enjoy your general existence and your work.
Well, I appreciate
all
that.
Of it. But I like you as a human.
Thank you. I mean, I warned people it'd be a loving, and that's this is where we have to end things. What's ahead? I mean, I know that's the broadest and biggest question ever, but what is the focus at the moment? You've just finished this score, you said, right? Is that the case?
Just finished that. When is this out?
This will be out in about 3 to 4 weeks.
Okay. Well, you should go watch Wyatt Cenac's AKA, which will be out. I believe it's on Topic. I don't know where to find that on the internet. Type in those things.
Yeah.
Type in those letters and you'll find it. I'm working on a show that, yes, there are puppets involved. But it's also based on the adult instructional albums. That's Not How You Do That.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can't talk a lot about it.
Yeah, but
very, very excited.
Amazing.
And I'm trying to focus, put all my energy, because I can take a little bit of time off to make sure that these things are the best that I want them to be on writing.
Mm.
So yeah, hopefully just shows and more shows and more shows, and I can go away and sit behind a camera and make perfect. Some things.
Every now and then someone tap you on the shoulder and say, "You doing any albums?" And
you're like, I am.
Get off my set.
Just finished an album with Quelle Chris that'll be out next year, called Everything Is Fine.
Yeah.
And a lot of rapping on it.
Yeah.
And I was like, if I'm gonna rap with anyone, it's gonna be the man I love. Makes We're gonna sense, do rapping right? together. We both do production on it. We're both handling videos. And that's all I can tell you about it right now, because it's got a lot of really interesting features. And the album sounds like exactly what the title sounds like.
Amazing.
Everything's fine.
I love that. I always remember hearing Sage Francis say years ago in an interview that when he found love, it almost ended his rap career. Mm-hmm. I love the idea that it can be the opposite, that love is what is bringing you back to rap. It's like, I will not rap again.
I will not.
I will now.
Okay. All right.
That's perfect. So where can people find you on social media?
Oh, please don't.
Where can people avoid you on social media?
You can avoid me. You can definitely not find me on Facebook. That's gone. You can find me at Jeannie Grigio.
Yep.
You can figure out how to spell that on Instagram, and at Jean Greasy, spelled correctly. Don't put a Z in there. Just greasy.
That's greasy. Perfect. Well, thank you very much.
I'm glad
we finally got to
me
sit
too.
Down and have a chat, podcast or otherwise. Cheers.
You've been listening to Scooby Pip's Discretion Pieces.
There we go. That was Jean Grey. I told you it was a good one, didn't I? As I said, it was amazing to me. I think what Jean is doing, what Quelle Chris is doing, and everyone else out there, people like Hannibal Buress and Open Mike Eagle and John Hodgman, and this just amalgamation of crossing over of artistic realms and types is fantastic. So yeah, check them out and look into all of them. Next week we're continuing on my New York tip, where I'll have Johnny Lee Miller on, who's an absolute legend. So that was a great chat too. I spoke to them back to back. I actually spoke to Johnny first and then Gene, but I've tried over this year to break up as often as I can, break up when there's too many guys in a row, because a lot of podcasts, it's very common that there's guys, a lot of guys on, and if it's of no extra effort, I'll try and break that up. And yeah, it's been really good. So I had a month the other, I think I had 5 or 6 or 7 women in a row the other month, and then there was 5 or 6 or 7 men in a row. So yeah, it was trying to break that up and keep things interesting and flowing and mixing the gender pool. So yeah, but Johnny Lee Miller, just absolute dude. Train Spotting and Train Spotting 2 are two of the best films ever. We talk about all of it. We talk about what happened to him, like Train Spotting and Hackers coming out around the same time, the blow up of that, what happened, how he capitalized, how he didn't capitalize, and we get into it. So yeah, it's a good chat. That's next week, and there's loads more before the end of the year. I will be doing a special Films of 2017 podcast. It's something I always do on social media. I do my top, it's normally like 16, because that is what is good to fit squares into a square. So it'll probably be my top 16 films of the year. I've got a current top 16. There's still a few films I'm going to catch, but I'll be doing that as a podcast ahead of doing it as my social media post. So yeah, check that out to come. And anyway, I'll talk to you next week. See you in a bit. Ta-ta.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.